I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, the U.S. State Department has linked Italy-based AI collective to Northwest Antifa extremists. Plus, the Seattle Times and other media outlets reap what they sow. And despite a budget crisis, the city of Seattle is dumping even more money into LGBTQIA+++ virtue signaling. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. We start the show today with a favorite topic of mine, and that is the effort to track down and dismantle radical left-wing extremism in the United States and beyond. And frankly, I'm in favor with tracking down and dismantling all sorts of political extremism when there's violence and vandalism and other, you know, attacks on journalists, really anything involved. But in the United States right now, it is very clear that we have a left-wing extremism problem. No matter how many times Democrats want to talk about January 6th of 2021, which again was an embarrassing day for the country, but they can't use it to excuse away hundreds, if not thousands, of acts of violence and vandalism perpetrated by people with a far-left ideology. So as you know, I was part of the Antifa roundtable at the White House last year, and one of the pledges that was made to those of us gathered by the Trump administration was that they were not only going to label Antifa a domestic and international terror organization, but they were going to seek out its funding and its infrastructure. So some major news today from the U.S. Department of State. This is the headline in the Post-Millennial. Revealed: extremist group AI Collective builds digital infrastructure to support Portland Antifa cell and Jane's Revenge, among other far-left terror organizations and groups in the United States and beyond. So essentially, this gets to the heart of, you know, one of the things that I think is always a question when you get these left-wing terror cells and groups like Antifa is part of the organizing infrastructure. And they're very good at organizing. And it seems like no matter what issue pops up, whether it was BLM, the summer of 2020, anti-capitalist sort of movements like the Occupy movement, anti-ICE movements, a little closer to what's happening right now, their ability to very quickly organize amongst themselves is pretty astonishing. And so part of it is looking at the digital footprint and how they're making all of that happen. So this is what the Department of State put out today. The AI Collective builds and provides the digital infrastructure for violent Antifa cells and other radical left-wing networks in the United States and across the world. Today, the United States is designating this extremist group as a specially designated global terrorist. AI Collective stands for, and forgive me, I don't speak Italian very well, Autistici Inventati. The Autistici Inventati Collective is an Italy-based hacker cell that provides far-left extremists with encrypted communications, calls, and web hosting services, all concealed from law enforcement. The AI Collective is a central node in the far left's war on our civilization, says the State Department. It says several sites hosted by the AI Collective offer detailed guides on waging terror attacks on critical infrastructure through arson, bombings, and sabotage. Far left terrorists are urged to attack bridges, pipelines, the electric grid, and even U.S. military logistics centers. So again, you have this Italy-based, basically digital network that is being extended to these terror cells across the world and in the United States to provide them with encrypted messaging, encrypted calls, to provide them instructions on how to commit their acts of terrorism. And this includes very real-world examples really close to home here in Seattle. The Department of State says one of America's most violent communist groups relies on the AI Collective. Rose City Antifa, which is Portland-based, used a site hosted by AI to dox ICE agents, incite attacks against them at their homes, and organize terror attacks on Border Patrol helicopters, leading to a federal indictment. For instance, they used one of these collective's sites to basically instruct some of their terrorists on the ground in Portland to point lasers at ICE and federal helicopters. And there was an indictment. You might remember the case when all that craziness was unfolding down outside the Portland ICE facility, where they actually like tracked people who pointed lasers at helicopters from the sky back to their homes, where they busted down the doors and arrested them. And so they're saying that that incident and those individuals involved traces back to this Autisti Inventati collective out of Italy. So a little more information on specific groups and instances that they trace back to the AI collective. Anarchists waged a violent campaign against a police facility in Georgia using an AI-hosted site to dox government employees and share instructions on building bombs to target government buildings. The attacks resulted in domestic terrorism charges and left an officer injured. So these aren't just people talking on the internet, in the dark corners of the internet, about things they hope will happen, things they think should happen. These are people who are using dark corners of the internet to plot, plan, and execute terror attacks on U.S. soil, some of which have happened, you know, very close to us, including down in Portland. Another example, the AI Collective hosts a site where foreign terrorists and anarchists document their acts of terror, urge others to stage attacks. A domestic terrorist boasted of his crimes on the site and was found guilty of bombing a police car and plotting to attack a federal building. And it goes, extends outside sort of this core anti-government group of like Antifa, anarchist-aligned individuals, a group called Jane's Revenge, which is a very like pro-abortion sort of group. It says left-wing extremists calling themselves Jane's Revenge carried out a violent campaign stretching from Colorado to New York, bombing pregnancy centers across the United States. Like, they want to kill babies so bad that they bomb pregnancy centers. What on earth is wrong with these people? It says they took to a site hosted by, you guessed it, the AI Collective to urge extremists to commit their own attacks across the country and across the world. This is the statement from U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio. Far-left terrorism poses a profound threat to the United States and the broader West. Today, the United States sanctioned Autisti Inventati, a major far-left tech collective whose services are used by the most active and violent Antifa cells in the United States and across the world. And we have some follow-ups to do on this, really to inquire with the State Department about what this means, not only for this collective, but also for any of the organizations who are utilizing it to plan attacks on places like Seattle and in Portland and across the country on ICE facilities, whatever it may be. Because if Rose City Antifa, which if you're not familiar with Rose City, it's sort of the OG Antifa group. And it's the example I use whenever the internet lunatics say, oh, Antifa's not a real thing. There's literally a group called Rose City Antifa. They have a website and they've styled themselves as Rose City Antifa for many, many years. As long as I've been covering far left extremism in the Pacific Northwest, which is like 15 years, Rose City Antifa has been around. So they call themselves Antifa. But if they're utilizing what is now, again, according to the State Department, they're designated in a global terrorist, this collective, then aren't they... Isn't it guilt by association? Why is the Rose City Antifa site up today? Why are they allowed to operate? And so are there then punishments for any individuals who are working with a designated global terror organization? I mean, you know, if you had a group here in the United States that was working with ISIS, what would happen to them? I think they'd end up at Guantanamo Bay. Do they still send people to Guantanamo Bay? I'm not sure, but I'm sure they do, even if they say they don't still send people to Guantanamo Bay, but I believe they do. And as I mentioned, you know, this is near and dear to my heart because, you know, I think my whole career in Seattle has been characterized by covering violent left-wing extremism. And I was lucky enough to go to the White House last year about this time to brief the president and members of his cabinet on the threat of Antifa and left-wing extremism in the United States. And at that roundtable, I was sitting next to our friend Andy Ngo, who literally wrote the book on Antifa. And one of the things he encouraged them to do at the time, as much as we were focused on, you know, what was happening in places like Seattle and Portland and Minneapolis, he said, this is a global threat. And a lot of the left-wing extremism that you see in places in Europe, in Central America, it's so identical I mean, down to what they wear, the signs they hold, their messaging. It is so identical to what's playing out in the United States. It's very clear that it's all intertwined. And this is a great example of some actual action and some investigative work that the federal government has done to tie all these individual instances, from pointing lasers at helicopters down in Portland, to bombing of pregnancy centers, to tie them back to this AI collective and say they're utilizing this to try to plot their activities and plan their activities and brag about their activities on encrypted messaging apps and whatever it is. So hopefully, you know, and there's this kind of balance here, which is, if you're the federal government, and I'm not a federal law enforcement agent, so I'm sure they've thought of all of these things, but, you know, if you have identified, you know, these sites and these places where some of this activity is being plotted and planned, there is a benefit to a certain extent in monitoring it and then being able to monitor it and thwart potential attacks. Because if you go in and you shut it down, at that point, they're going to find another way to communicate. It might take them a little bit of time to kind of restructure, so to speak. And then you got to go track it down and figure it out all over again. So there's kind of a balance there. And I wonder to what extent the federal government is going to abruptly shut all of these things down or sort of monitor them and then go after people and build charges. So we'll be following up with the United States State Department. But some pretty relevant news on the effort to fight radical left-wing extremism. Now, if only they would find the person who tried to blind me with Wasp Killer. That's what I really want the federal government to do. Selfish? Yes, but I will hold that grudge until the day I die. And whenever I'm at any sort of left-wing anything, not to sound like it's a joke, because it was actually very traumatizing when I was attacked last year outside the ICE facility and someone tried to blind me with a Wasp Killer, the person's body type was very, very distinctive. Fat, round, pear-shaped, kind of distinctive voice and everything. Every time I'm at some left-wing whatever, I'm looking for that body type. What I want to create is sort of a, what do you call it? A stencil, so to speak.
Like a mold.
A stencil, so to speak.
Okay.
You know, I'm going to get the picture, then I'm going to cut out the body shape. And then I'm going to go to these places and just hold it up to people. Like, it's you. I will find you, okay? I will find you. And
hopefully
you will be
they
held
haven't
accountable.
Found
Yeah, unless they found Ozempic. Great point, Nicole. All right, coming up next, the Seattle Times reaps what it sows. It wants to encourage and go after me, saying I'm not a member of the media, I shouldn't get a press pass, defend me when I'm under attack and my free speech is under attack. Well, then the same thing is going to happen to them, because turnabout is fair play. First, Tara says, I switched my homeowner's insurance to FirstMark and saved $1,600 a year and have far better coverage. Just our latest FirstMark challenge victory for Tara. $1,600 a year, better insurance. Save $1,600 a year. Who could not use $1,600 a year? I can think of a million things I would rather spend that on than insurance. So you could be like Tara, just take the FirstMark challenge. It is totally free. You go to FirstMark, say, hey, my best friend Brandy told me to call you. And they'll be like, great, Brandy's our best friend too. And then you all just become best friends and they'll go over your insurance, talk to you about your insurance needs, go out, shop their market of carriers, come back with their recommendations. And it could be like, Tara, you save $1,600 a year and get better insurance. Or they might say, hey, your insurance is great. You don't even need us. I would keep what you already have. And that's just the sign of an honest company. 11,000 Washington families have taken the FirstMark challenge and been a FirstMark challenge victory. You could be one of them. Your savings could start tomorrow. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. All right. So there is, as we speak, a battle waging in Washington state over free speech, independent media, old media. And I am just smack dab in the center of it, which I don't want to be. I get no joy out of it. Sometimes I really love when people attack me because it creates great content for the show. But as Nicole will attest, I have been quite stressed lately. When we're not doing this show, I'm on the phone with lawyers. I'm reviewing documents. Or I'm just eating ice cream and crying myself to sleep. No, I'm not crying myself to sleep, but it's annoying. I'd rather just focus on the show. We have a million things to do, an important election coming up. And so a lot of this started with this bogus complaint that a group called Washingtonians for Ethical Government, as you know, filed against Let's Go Washington, naming me, saying I have done so much to support the Let's Go Washington initiatives and talked about them so much on my show that I no longer have First Amendment rights and I need to assign a value to it every time I talk about the initiatives. And so they say that my free speech is actually in-kind political advertising. So as you guys know, when that complaint came down, the media didn't care about doing its job, didn't care about looking into the group and who was actually behind the complaint, which are just a bunch of radical progressives who picked a nice name to make it sound like they care about ethical government. The media didn't really care to reach out to me for comment or really get to the bottom of, you know, the motivations behind trying to sully my good name and reputation. And they have just done waves of negative headlines about me that really, I mean, these latest round of headlines, that was like 2 weeks ago, they didn't even reach out to me for comment. They didn't reach out to Let's Go Washington for comment, but they sure got comment from the group that filed the complaint, reacting to the PDC's decision to move this into some sort of formal investigative posture, even though, like, look, this is settled. And I know I've said it a million times, but if you're new to the show, there was a 2007, as if the First Amendment isn't enough to settle it, there was a 2007 state Supreme Court case where our friend John Carlson, who was a host at KVI Radio at the time, and Kirby Wilson, they were supporting a no new gas tax initiative. And a similar thing happened where progressive groups said, you shouldn't be able to do that, and went after them. It went all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court of Washington State, very progressive, ruled 9-0, like, no, that's their First Amendment right. It's not an in-kind political contribution. So not only is there no validity, you know, this complaint sort of suggests, and it's designed to give this idea that I'm out there, like, Let's Go Washington is sneaking me money under the table. Where is it? And they're telling me, go out and say these things about the initiatives, and I don't have the free will to be able to do that myself. Like, somebody has to maybe pay me to do it or promise me things to say that men aren't women and the government isn't a parent and we shouldn't pass unconstitutional income taxes. So anyway, the whole thing is just bogus. It's designed to hurt my reputation because we have become, I think, a pretty big platform in speaking out about something that's going to be on the ballot that Democrats really don't want to pass. So they're just trying to give people this idea that I have bad motivations, like I'm motivated by money or something else or someone's pulling my strings, which of course isn't true. But the media has really given this a lot of attention because they don't like me because I'm hard on old media. I'm a traitor because I left my TV job for independent news. They don't like me. They don't like Let's Go Washington. And they're super far left and biased. And so they're giving this all this oxygen. So I said on my show, after the latest round of headlines, like, turnabout is fair play. If the media is going to give credence to what is clearly a bogus complaint, an attack against a free press, they should be very careful because the same sort of nonsense that was used to file this complaint against Let's Go Washington and me, you could say that there are a lot of other newsrooms in the state who would fit that mold. You know, what Let's Go Washington says is I have advertisers on the show, right? Our wonderful advertisers, who I love very much. And they pay for advertising. They also, sometimes I do paid social media posts for our advertisers as well. And it's very clear, you know, it's got a little paid promotion thing on it. And so they say that I'm no longer a news personality. I am a social media influencer. And so since I charge certain people for advertising, now everything I say has like a price assigned to it, right? But again, there are a lot of newsrooms in the state that sell advertising and also engage in opinion. Virtually every major newspaper sells advertising, has an editorial board. Radio stations, like our friends at Cairo News Radio, as much as I don't want to get them wrapped up in this, I will. They've got radio hosts like our friend John Curley, who's been at some of the exact same Let's Go Washington events I have. But there's not a complaint against him yet. Our friend Ari Hoffman at KVI does a radio show. They sell advertising. He's been at some of the very same events I have, but they didn't file the complaint against him. So I said, we will take this to its logical conclusion. If they want to continue a witch hunt, and if the media won't call it out for what it is, then we'll get every newsroom in the state wrapped up in PDC complaints. And I said I was going to do that, but someone beat me to it. And Ari Hoffman, on his own, I didn't tell him to, I haven't been part of it. He has been filing PDC complaint after PDC complaint after PDC complaint using the exact model of the complaint against me, basically to prove a point that, look, if you're not going to defend Brandy, you're going to end up having to defend yourself. And you're going to get wrapped up in hours of lawyer work and hundreds of thousands of dollars against PDC complaints because you wouldn't stand up for Brandy when you should have stood up for her and freedom of the press. So I had mentioned briefly on the show, the very first complaint that Ari Hoffman filed was against the Seattle Times. And it's not only a genius tactic, but in reading the 16-page complaint from Ari Hoffman, what the Seattle Times did is 100 times more concerning than anything I've ever done. So let's get to the basics of the complaint, because I want you to understand, like, I don't want to go this route. I believe in freedom of the press. I believe that editorial opinions are protected by the First Amendment and are not in-kind political contributions. But I also look at this and I'm like, oh, wow, there might actually be something to this Seattle Times complaint that's at the very least concerning. I don't know if it's a violation of campaign finance laws, but their readers and the public ought to know about it. So this is a complaint filed by Ari Hoffman against the Seattle Times Company, the Seattle Foundation, Clean and Prosperous Washington, Clean and Prosperous Institute, Green Jobs PAC, and No on 2117. So this complaint centers around the Seattle Times and activities the Seattle Times was engaged in during the Let's Go Washington initiative campaign to repeal the Climate Commitment Act. So, of course, Initiative 2117 would have repealed the Climate Commitment Act in 2024, and then there was the No on 2117 campaign. So at the time, the Seattle Times launched something called the Climate Lab. You might be familiar with it, where they have a whole section of reporting on their website that specifically centers around climate-related coverage. They also do something called Project Homelessness, specifically centers around coverage of homelessness. But the timing of the Climate Lab was very interesting because it came during this debate over the Climate Commitment Act. It came, you know, and during the whole effort and campaign to repeal it, etc. So I want to read part of this complaint to you. It says, public records establish that the Climate Lab was funded largely through outside philanthropic support, and that this financial support enabled the Seattle Times to add 4 dedicated newsroom positions and produce climate coverage that then publisher and CEO Frank Blevin stated would not otherwise have been available. Seattle Foundation serves as Climate Lab's fiscal sponsor. But during the same election campaign, Seattle Foundation also expressly joined the effort opposing Initiative 2117 and published Protect the Climate Commitment Act, Vote No on 2117. So here at the very same time that the Seattle Times launches its Climate Lab through private funding, including through its main fiscal sponsor, the Seattle Foundation, separately, the Seattle Foundation embarks on an effort to defeat the initiative to repeal the Climate Commitment Act. It goes even further than that. So if you look at the Climate Lab About section on the Seattle Times website, you'll see a full list of sponsors. It says the project is funded in part by the Bullitt Foundation, CO2 Foundation, Jim and Beard Faulkner, Mike and Becky Hughes, the Henry M. Jackson Foundation, Martin Fabert Foundation, Craig McKibben, and Sarah Murner, as well as the University of Washington and, again, the Seattle Foundation. Craig McKibben and Sarah Murner. So get this, a good spot from our friends at the Linwood Times. According to the PDC, Sarah Murner contributed $500,000 to the No on 2117 campaign on February 8th, 2024, and Craig McKibben contributed $500,000 to the No on 2117 campaign, also in February 2024. Both contributions were made the same month the Seattle Times launched the Climate Lab. So here you have the Climate Lab, where the Seattle Times says, yes, we have outside donors. Here they are. But the outside donors don't have any editorial control over the content. But two of the top donors to the Climate Lab, the very same month, they provide the fiscal support to make the climate lab possible, they become some of the largest single donors to the No on 2117 campaign. And the same with their main fiscal sponsor, Seattle Foundation. Now, why would Sarah Murner, Craig McKibben, the Seattle Foundation, who are all and were opposed to repealing the Climate Commitment Act, also want to fund the Climate Lab? In the Seattle Times reporting on climate, is it because they thought that the Seattle Times Climate Lab would take a neutral position on all these issues and just do some really good dogged work on covering the climate? No, it's because they wanted, in my opinion, and knew that the Seattle Times would have coverage that would be lockstep with their opinions on the climate. And again, I mean, the evidence in this complaint from Ari Hoffman to the Public Disclosure Commission is pretty startling. And keep in mind, the Seattle Times never disclosed, although they disclosed a list of the sponsors, it would have been up to individual readers to take a look at that list, look at the names, cross-reference the names with the Public Disclosure Commission and campaign contributions to the effort to keep the Climate Commitment Act, the No on 2117 campaign. Do you think any Seattle Times readers are going to do that? Do you think the Seattle Times had an obligation to say some of the funders of the Climate Lab and our reporting on the climate are some of the biggest contributors to No on I-2117? Something to think about. And then at the same time all of this is happening, the Seattle Times Climate Lab is publishing article after article after article talking about the benefits of the Climate Commitment Act, talking about how bad it would be if the Climate Commitment Act were repealed. And these aren't opinion pieces. These are quote-unquote news articles in the Climate Lab funded by some of the largest donors to the No on 2117 campaign. A couple of the headlines. While lawmakers rush to show Climate Act's value before it goes to the ballot. Washington to launch EV rebate program. Here's what you could save. While carbon auction demand drops, prices remain low. Don't worry about it. Hey, gas isn't going to go up that bad. WAA to distribute $72 million from carbon market auctions for community energy projects. See all the great things the Climate Commitment Act is funding. Please don't repeal it. Please don't repeal it. Washington's carbon market pumps billions of dollars to state projects. What happens if it vanishes? Not opinion pieces. Not editorial pieces. Journalism paid for by some of the biggest single donors opposed to repealing the Climate Commitment Act. And the Seattle Times wants to act like it's the arbitrator of what's journalism. The Seattle Times, as will become very apparent in internal emails that I plan to release on this show next week after some legal wrangling is completed, the Seattle Times and its reporters were very involved in the effort to stop me from getting a press pass in Olympia. The Seattle Times and some of its reporters are some of the main reasons why right now I'm locked in a lawsuit against the state of Washington with Ari Hoffman and Jonathan Cho, where we are being forced to prove that we're bona fide members of the press in order to go down and do our jobs in Olympia. The Seattle Times is in part responsible for that. I'm not credible enough to get a press pass, according to some individuals from the Seattle Times. And meanwhile, they're taking money to hire four reporters dedicated to specifically covering the climate during one of the biggest fights over one of the biggest climate policies in the state of Washington months before it's going to go to the ballot. And they never once tell their readers that some of the key funders of their climate lab are some of the biggest donors to the No on 2117 campaign. And they want us to believe that it's just a coincidence that all their articles are very pro-Climate Commitment Act. And not only that, at the very same time, the Seattle Times editorial board, as well as other outside opinion pieces, are being published in favor of the Climate Commitment Act, opposed to the initiative to repeal the Climate Commitment Act. Just some of the Seattle Times editorial board communications. August 2024, months before it goes to the ballot, fact-checking the initiative 2117 debate. The Seattle Times editorial board recommends keep Washington's Climate Commitment Act, vote no on I-2117. Well, of course they think that. Some of the big donors who want to vote no are also funding four newsroom positions. With I-2117 choice, WA voters could influence national climate policy. Some of the other opinion content that was published by the Times. I-2117 is a scorched earth folly. No on I-2117 to retain the Climate Commitment Act. Climate Commitment Act, don't repeal. Climate Commitment Act, we are all part of the problem and solution. That is leaps and bounds beyond anything I have ever done or even considered doing on this show from the perspective of journalistic standards and integrity. I have an advertising relationship with Future 42, as you know. We run a segment that they sponsor every single week. They don't have any editorial control over that segment. They don't pay me behind the scenes to take specific policy positions. It's the subject of one of these bogus PDC complaints against me that the Seattle Times and all their friends and allies, one of the main reasons why they're behind the scenes, again, in internal emails we will release at a certain date and time when I'm legally allowed to do so. You know, my advertising relationship with Future 42, which is very out there in the open, is one of the reasons why all these high and mighty journalists say, you're not one of us. You're not a member of the press. Oh, she has an advertising relationship with Future 42. She speaks at Let's Go Washington events. Yeah, I do all of that very publicly. I post about it even all over my social media pages. Meanwhile, you started an entire section of your newspaper on climate policy, funded by people who wanted to keep the Climate Commitment Act, and all your newspaper put out is pro-Climate Commitment Act propaganda. So again, you want to play this game, we'll play this game. You want to act high and mighty, like, again, you're the arbitrator of journalistic standards and integrity, when you're really rolling around in the mud with the climate folks, the climate grifters. So the Seattle Times should come clean. It should say, hey, we didn't make the disclosures to our audience we should have made. And look, if it's their business model to get in bed with these people, by all means, but at least be transparent about it. Or maybe the PDC should launch a full-fledged investigation, as they seem to be eager to do with me. All right, coming up next in our segment, Unbelievable, even more money the city of Seattle is dedicating to the LGBTQIA+2S community, above and beyond, above and beyond what it's giving to trans refugees, we'll discuss. First, a lot going on right now in the housing market. A lot of listings up for sale because people are just leaving. Our friend Wes Jones with sellwithwes.com says one of the reasons is the tax climate here. You know, you have people who they might not be subject to this new millionaire's tax when it takes effect, but they can see the writing on the wall and it's not good.
Many people believe, as you do, as do I, that it is going to be an income tax for everyone. And believe it or not, the vast majority of the people that I work with, they're actually not going to be impacted by the millionaire's tax. But what they are impacted in is just the cost of living that we are in. And they could be people who are my generation with families. They could be people who are getting ready to retire. And they just see the writing on the wall that it is very, very expensive to live here. They see where the future is headed and they are making the decision to eject now because this is not going to be the place for them to raise their family or the place for them to retire affordably.
Yeah. And unfortunately, if you are making the decision to eject right now, you know, we had some friends who decided to move to Arizona. It did take them a little longer than they thought it would to sell their home. And we've had a house in our neighborhood that's been for sale for, gosh, several weeks now, although they're not using Wes Jones. And I think had they used Wes Jones, it probably already would have been sold. But the bottom line is, in a market like this, you do need to put a little extra time and energy into it. But let Wes take that stress. He's worked with people who just ejected and moved out of state, and then let him, you know, deal with everything with their home sale here and take the stress out of the process. So reach out to him, sellwithwest.com, sellwithwest.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right, let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. I'm telling you guys, now is the time to be transgender. There has never been a better time in the history of humanity to be transgender than right now. Or LGBTQ, questioning, bisexual, two-spirit, if you will. Because you can get so much free shit from the government based on who you sleep with, how you identify. Look, I could say I'm questioning. If my husband's hearing this, it's just for the show, okay? I'm questioning. All right, what can I get from the city of Seattle? Seattle Mayor Katie Wilson posting this on her Facebook page. Seattle announces $550,000 in new investments for 2S LGBTQIA plus communities. And I do believe this is in addition to the money they set aside for transgender refugees, although they still have never provided us with any of the data they used to suggest that there were so many transgender refugees in Seattle from other states that they had to set aside money to help them settle in here. So apparently, and this is, I think, news to me, apparently Seattle has a trans and queer community stabilization interdepartmental team. This is based on community input and the recommendations of the trans and queer community stabilization interdepartmental team. We are moving forward with the following measures in 2026. $450,000 in rapid relief funding for the 2S LGBTQIA plus community-based organizations to support urgent stabilization needs. They are unstable. Although I have heard there is a transgender homeless cult roaming Cal Anderson Park, assaulting people on video, which we've talked about on the show, that does sound pretty unstable to me. It says, whether you were born here or have newly arrived, every single person has a rightful place in this city. We are investing in the needs of our 2S LGBTQIA plus communities to make Seattle a safe and welcoming place during a time of uncertainty. So what exactly would help Seattle feel like a safe and welcoming place? Which I would argue is sort of a contradiction, because you're saying they fled here to feel safe. You're saying they fled here because we're a welcoming place. So aren't we already safe and welcoming? Why do we, or are we not? Or does that only count? Are we only safe and welcoming if we give them money? Okay. So it'll be $100,000 for community resources and services for an event. They're going to host an event that will feature local service providers, city resources and services, modest material relief like ORCA cards and other services, and information for and support with the enrollment process. Couple things here. I've hosted a lot of events in my life. It doesn't cost $100,000. What is it? You're hosting like a fair, like a job fair type thing, but just for trans and gay people. You don't need to rent a space. You can do it at City Hall. And you're saying these organizations are going to come and like set up a booth and hand out pamphlets. Okay, well, that doesn't cost you any money to have outside organizations come and set up a table. You already have all that. So what is costing $100,000? Now, you said you're going to hand out ORCA cards. So yeah, you have to pay to ride the is ORCA for the bus or Sound Transit? Shows how much I know. Is it both? You have to pay to ride public transit, but the drug addicts don't, the homeless people don't, and the trans people don't. They're going to give them free ORCA cards because of who they choose to sleep with and how they choose to identify. Make that make sense. We will reach out to the city of Seattle, though, to ask, why does that cost $100,000? You put me in charge of it. Depending on how much you want to spend on free ORCA cards, that would be the only cost, I would think. So I'll do it for $500. I'll do it for $500. And they still haven't decided, though, fully where to spend all this money. They just set it aside and they're going to figure that out later, and they want community input. So we're currently developing recipient eligibility criteria and designing the selection process with input from communities, and we'll share more information in the coming weeks. At this time, no funding has been awarded. We will also pursue additional funding in 2027 and beyond. So the emergency funding for trans community members, all of this stuff isn't going to be enough. They're going to pursue additional funding in 2027 while the city's in a budget crisis. And while they're also dealing with a pretty profound public safety issue that isn't getting any better and could really use that money to prop up their police department and maybe invest in technologies that would help their police department at a time of low police staffing. Seattle Socialist Mayor Katie Wilson announcing a nationwide search for Seattle's new police chief, which is just so stupid to me. I've always hated this. And maybe I'm wrong. I mean, I'm in favor of the best person getting the job. But this idea, when we have hundreds of law enforcement officers, many of whom who have worked for the city for their entire careers, this idea that we need to launch nationwide searches and go out and pluck someone from some different city who's never been here a day in their life, and then they'll somehow be able to lead the Seattle Police Department better than the dedicated men and women who have been here for decades, is one of the stupidest concepts I have ever heard of. She said, I'm looking for a leader who understands that, well, if you're looking for a leader, while you're at it, if you could find us a leader to take your job, that would be really great. I'm looking for a leader who understands that public safety starts with public trust. It is a trust that is earned every single day. Seattle's next police chief must be visible, accountable, and present in our neighborhoods, listening to residents, workers, and businesses across our city. We need a leader who will also be present and engaged with SPD and focus on operational excellence, leadership development, and internal culture. We also need a leader who is not white. We will not be hiring a white police chief. I made that last part up, but you know that's true. Unless it's a woman or somebody who's LGBTQ+, those are the only ways it could be a white person. Otherwise, it will absolutely not, because she got so much flack for getting rid of the black chief.
I don't even think it could be just a woman. It would have to be an LGBTQ.
Yes. And what's wrong with Andre Sales? I know he's from out. Right. I know. And I just said that thing. But he's already here. He's been here. And he was a deputy chief. You have him as the interim chief right now. And the cops really like him. Even though he's like an outsider, the cops really like him. And the community likes him, too. So it's like, do you really have to embark on this long search process? Just let the guy be the chief at this point. It's just so silly to me. They have an advisory committee as well that will receive input from the public, which I'm sure will be profound and deep and meaningful. At the same time, Seattle has lost 69 cops so far this year. It's been the worst year since 2023. They are just not able to hire new officers as quickly as officers are leaving. And all of this uncertainty with the chief situation doesn't help, because people want to know, like, who am I going to work for? I'm all going, first, I don't want to work for the socialist mayor who has a long track record of hating cops and is obviously incompetent. And then I don't even know who the chief of police is going to be. Our friend Jason Rance, breaking this story, says the Seattle Police Department has lost an additional 7 officers just since August 11th. And it might not sound like a lot, but when you think about how much goes into recruiting and training and how much time that takes to replace every single one of them, that is a lot. It says putting the total separated from the department this year at 69. It only grew its total sworn count by 6 people over the last month and added exactly 1 officer to the force actually available to answer 911 calls, according to internal staffing data obtained exclusively by the Jason Rance Show. He says the department is treading water. As of August 21st, SPD counts 1,197 sworn personnel when recruits, students in field training, and unavailable officers are folded in. So that includes, that number includes recruits, students in field training, and officers who are unavailable. Maybe like they're on leave or whatever it is. So it's not 1,197, really, that are out on the streets. He says that is up slightly from 191 in mid-July. Strip out everyone who cannot be dispatched and the picture changes. Fully available and deployable SPOG patrol officers are now at 854, a gain of 1 since July 17th. Total deplorable sworn, deplorable. Total, you know what, the left-wing blogs are going to pull that. Total deployable sworn, a figure that includes management ranks and command staff, actually dropped from 930 to 929. That includes the former police chief, Sean Barnes, who was pushed out after the Bite of Seattle mass shooting. He was out of town again as the city dealt with a major shooting. They lost the chief. So yeah, down 1 minus the 1, Chief Sean Barnes. But they're also, they're treading water. You know, they're trying to add new officers, but so many are leaving. They also have a lot of people on their ranks who are able to retire. And I promise those officers are not going to stay one day longer than they need to stay in order to get their retirement benefits, their full benefits. So, you know, when you have when a city that elects a mayor who was an activist who hated cops and wanted to defund and dismantle policing, you think of it for any job. It doesn't even have to be police. For any job, are you going to go work for someone who's on the record having hated you? Like, probably not, right? And in the case of these officers, their lives are literally on the line every day. And the idea of working for someone who doesn't value and respect the difficult, dangerous work they do, none of us would put ourselves in that situation. So it's really not a surprise. Even when some of these officers are making bank, there's a lot of officers making over $200,000 a year, but that's still not enough money for them to work for the socialist mayor and take the chances in a city where one instance, one thing could happen, one officer involved shooting that the activists seize on to, and all of a sudden the political climate turns hostile on you. That's not the kind of city you want to work in when you're a cop. All right, we'll get to some national news coming up next. First, a lot of investors focused on AI, crypto, tech, what's happening in the energy sector, and all those things are appropriate. But you want to make sure that your money manager isn't missing anything. If you need a second opinion on your retirement portfolio, reach out to our friend Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital. He's my money manager, and he can talk about how Bulwark Capital is focused on risk management. They're always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So why not just get that second opinion? It's free. Schedule your Know Your Risk portfolio review today at knowyourriskpodcast.com. Plus, unlike other wealth management firms, you can get market updates every day from Zach on his Know Your Risk podcast, on his YouTube channel, all social media platforms. Just search Know Your Risk podcast. All right, really quickly, I just want to update a story that is of national interest right now that definitely involves Washington State, and that's the fight over mail-in balloting. So just to give you a quick refresher, there were a couple existing lawsuits against changes that President Donald Trump wanted to put into place at the United States Postal Service ahead of the midterm elections. And the changes were basically designed, in his mind, to improve election integrity across the country, develop lists for every state of eligible voters. The USPS would only handle ballots of eligible voters on those lists, etc. So SCOTUS decided to lift an injunction that had a lower court had put against the president's new policies. There's still one injunction in place. I don't know how much longer it will be. But Secretary of State Steve Hobbs, so the man in charge of Washington's elections, put out a press release this morning because we're kind of in a state of limbo. Are the changes going to go into effect? Are they not? Before the midterms, what does that mean for us? Are we still going to be able to carry out our elections, which are mail-in ballot elections? So there's definitely a potential chaotic situation, and I absolutely acknowledge that. It's something that worries me quite a bit. So Steve Hobbs put out this press release. Washington joins lawsuit to halt USPS mail ballot rule ahead of midterms. So he says he's joining a multi-state lawsuit seeking to quickly halt the U.S. Postal Service's final rule on federal ballot mail. He said it's clear that the federal government is trying to take over our elections. We are prepared to fight every step of the way to stop that from happening. And keep in mind, when SCOTUS ruled that the rule could go into place, they didn't rule on the legality of it. They basically just got rid of this injunction. And so the legal fight still continues. So that's what he's talking about here. It says, he said, the USPS rule would impose extensive costs at a time when the state and counties are already experiencing financial hardship. Among other requirements, counties would have to destroy and replace over 5 million ballot envelopes they have already printed for the November general election. The rule also requires that states add all voters who will be mailed a ballot in each federal election to a ballot portal operated by the USPS. The USPS would require the voter's name, mailing address, and a unique intelligent mail barcode for each voter's outgoing and return ballot envelopes. To send ballots to voters, county election officials would have to validate the compliance of each ballot envelope at the post office, taking less than a minute per ballot envelope by the USPS own estimates. This would amount to over 9.5 years worth of time to send ballots to the more than 5 million Washington voters who will receive a mail-in ballot. I'm not going to do the math on that. I'm just going to trust that he did the math on that. He said the rule is designed to discourage and burden vote by mail. Okay, here's where I'm at on this. You can yell at me all you want. I agree that this shouldn't go into effect before the November election. I just, from a purely government competence point of view, do you think the government's competent enough, even if states wanted to be able to do all of this in 2 months and not have it be a total absolute train wreck disaster come November? I do not. So I agree with some of the rules and some of the concerns about election integrity that the president has. I wish our state would cooperate with the federal government when it comes to making sure that our voter rolls are clean, making sure that we actually require voter ID. The idea that you can just attest to being a citizen and get a ballot, some chain of custody issues. Yes, 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 yes. I think we need to address that. Washington has been fighting them every step of the way rather than adopting some common sense policies and procedures. So I'm all for the president doing some of this. I think he needs to do it after the November election. So you can be mad at me for saying that, but this is just like, I don't want it to be a mess. And I'm actually more concerned that my ballot won't get to where it's going if all of a sudden we send this all into a tailspin. So we will see what happens here. And I'm open to hearing your disagreements if you have them. All right, I just want to put this out there. The Hill published a really nice op-ed from Annalee Wilson and Francis Stout here in Washington State. The headline, "What Megan Rapinoe Gets Wrong in the Transgender Athlete Debate." So, of course, Francis Stout and Annalee Wilson, two high school female athletes in Washington who've been very involved in the fight to protect girls' sports. I am grateful The Hill decided to publish a co-op-ed written by them. In it, they take aim at Megan Rapinoe, the former soccer star who basically thought they should just get over it. Megan Rapinoe recently wrote an op-ed that women and girls can speak for ourselves. As two female high school athletes living under Washington State's current sports policies, we could not agree more. That is why Rapinoe's essay is so frustrating. She says girls can speak for ourselves, but she dismisses the girls who do. We do not want Rapinoe to stop speaking. We are asking her to stop dismissing girls who disagree with her, treating them like they are invisible, and claiming they are hateful or being manipulated. When she does that, she fuels hostility and makes it harder for girls to tell their stories without fear. Listening to girls means listening to all girls, even the ones who disagree. We are speaking for ourselves and we will not quit. So well said and so true. It's like people like Megan Rapinoe, she wants to have her voice and have her voice heard and all of that, but then dismisses and wants girls who disagree with her to shut up or think that they're if you've heard Francis or Annalee speak, they're speaking for themselves. They are very, very smart, brave young women, and no one has to tell them or put thoughts in their mind. No one has to brainwash them into realizing that boys aren't girls. Most people realize that. All right, sorry, it's not even Halloween, and the cancel culture has already begun. Target apologizing for a children's clown Halloween costume after some backlash. They said they pulled the costume from sale. It depicted a circus clown that critics said evoked blackface and minstrel shows. The product sold as the Kids Glows Under Blacklight Circus Clown Halloween costume prompted backlash on social media, with some consumers saying it resembled a racist caricature. So here it is, next to the historic pictures that they say the costume evokes. Okay, what even is the costume? I have to say that before I read Target's apology. Here's what I don't get. Does that even look like a clown to you? Is it from a movie? Is it something that I'm missing with its big creepy smile?
I'm not sure. That's why I'm kind of on team. What even is it? Not a good idea, Target. But
because I will say it does look like those historical pictures, like at least the one.
Oh yeah.
So what I need to know is what was it supposed to, is it a, it's like a Joker slash pumpkin slash clown? It's just stupid. It's just who's buying that costume? Like, hey mom, I want to be this weird,
the black light and orange thing, I think is what sells it, maybe.
Yeah, super strange. And it only had 2 stars on Target. So I don't know that a lot of people are going to buy it, but here's what Target said in its apology. "We removed an offensive Halloween costume that should never have been part of our assortment. It is no longer for sale. As a company, we got this wrong and we're deeply sorry. We know this is especially hurtful for our Black guests, team members, and partners. Removing the costume is an important first step, and we're looking closely at how this happened and what needs to change to ensure this won't happen again. So I asked you guys, why not have a little fun? In our daily subscriber show poll, do you think the costume is racist? Yes or no? Nicole, do you believe this costume is racist?
I'm not sure if it was intentionally racist, but it appears so. But I think it's the mouth.
Yeah, the mouth a little bit.
If it was without the mouth, then I would say you could probably make a case for it not being. There was a, I was looking this up, so I just did kind of an image search to see if there's anything else that compares.
Right, is there like a movie character or?
There's, I don't see a movie character. Okay. However, there was like another costume available from, you know, the Halloween store or whatever that is similar but different pattern. So it's not a squiggly line pattern, yeah. But it is very similar. Okay. To the same colors and the black light, everything, but his face is painted white because it's a white kid.
Okay.
His face is painted white and he has like the Joker thing through the eyes.
Ah, okay.
So it's possible, but it's just because they used a black kid in the, you know, yeah. They were trying to be woke with the black kid.
I don't think it was probably intended to be racist, and I don't really find it racist per se for that reason, but I just think it's a stupid costume.
It's kind of dumb.
I just think it's a stupid costume.
But if the kid had a painted white face with the Joker eyes, we would not be having this conversation. I don't.
Oh, 100%.
So I think that's why, you know, that was bad marketing, I guess.
Crafty Grandma Crispy, I'm not sure I should read this comment. So first of all, the 20% of you say yes, 80% of you say no, it's not racist. Crafty Grandma Crispy says, I'm not sure you meant this way, but there were so many complaints about BIPOC peeps not being able to see themselves in advertisements, Barbie commercials, etc. Now when they are represented, it's racist. So like, yeah, use a black kid model, right? And it's like, now it's racist, but I think it's more so the combination of the two.
But maybe that's a lesson.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes they're so, you know, hell-bent on using somebody who's not white, and then they use it in the wrong circumstance, and it looks very bad.
Yeah, 3D Rage says, just more angry housewives with nothing better to do with their lives. Bully Mom, that was my first thought when I saw a black kid wearing it. So it was her first thought when she saw it. So I guess if you're familiar with that imagery, you might kind of go that direction. And look, if people are questioning it widely, then yeah, it's probably just not a good idea, but it's also just a stupid costume. Donald Shaw, the costume will be perceived as racist by many people. Racist or not, it is in bad taste. Retailers want to make money and not piss off their consumers. Who in the company is choosing what they put on their shelf? Remember all the LGBTQ stuff they displayed last year? Kat said, similar to Nicole, if it were a white child, there wouldn't be an issue. It's just a stupid looking costume.
Here's the other costume. Side by side.
Oh, yeah. See, that doesn't black light reactive.
So it seems like it might be a knockoff
of
that.
You know what? Yes. If this were a white kid, for sure, we wouldn't have the conversation. It's just because they put a black kid in the costume and then it looked like, yeah, okay, I get it. I see it. I understand. And I don't think anybody's trying to be racist. Matt Gilbert said, I watched Gutfeld last night, and I'll go with Tyrus's take that it's not racist. Yeah, it's just a bad costume. 100%. I love Gutfeld. I'm trying to get on Gutfeld. I think I'm funny enough. Choose me. Choose me, Gutfeld.
You know, I actually think you're funnier than a lot of guests on
that
show.
Thank you. That is so nice. That's really nice of you. I appreciate that. I don't know. When you have to tell people you're funny, are you funny? I always tell my husband, I'm like, I'm so funny. He's like,
you say that often. Are you?
I do. Like, I'm hilarious. All right. What am I doing? Oh, comments from the live stream. Okay. All right. On the State Department tracking Antifa's digital footprint, Baron of Gray Matter, AOC says woke one was crazy. To wave it away, imagine if Omega said January 6th was crazy. Yeah, I mean, I have said January 6th was crazy. And the reason I say that is because if it had been a BLM takeover or just like they had been climbing up the walls at the Capitol and breaking windows, and I'm not saying everybody did that, the right would have lost its mind. You just have to flip the people involved and the reactions involved would have been flipped. And I just think, you know, politically motivated rioting of any kind is obviously wrong.
Chris says, any arrest yet or is it just another strong worded letter from D.C.?
Well, they outlined some of the arrests that have been made, you know, in the laser thing that led to federal charges, the rioting in Georgia, the They use this nexus to arrest the person who bombed that police vehicle. So yes, I mean, I actually think that they gave examples of arrests. And so I want to see what else comes of it for sure, though. I understand where you're coming from.
What about the wasp spray?
What about the wasp spray? My eyes still hurt. They've never been the same. Ah, Necro Two Shoes. Remember back in the day when the FBI would take down MP3 sites in minutes? Yeah, when they'd crack down like people That's who were true. Pirating Napster. Music. Yeah.
DePluribus says bringing them to justice is protecting others.
I agree. Mm-hmm. On the Seattle Times complaint, Matthew Cook said Brandy's a rabble rouser. I try.
You try. Papa Woody says you're kind of a big deal, Brandy.
Am I? Sure. No. Rick Johnson, Was State Government.
She's going to be unbearable later. No.
Why?
Too many compliments today.
Oh, I needed them. Lucky, you're being so good today. Where's my dog? My dog's at the studio
right
today.
Behind you.
Hold on.
Oh, don't say her
you're
name.
You're so beautiful and elegant. I love her so much. What am I doing, Rick Johnson? Was State under Ferguson and Brown weaponized against people they don't like. Trump, Brandy, let's go Washington. Stinking hypocrites, as Dory would say. Yeah. Dory stinking would be right hypocrite. In the same boat as me if he were still here today.
You would have filed the complaint against him.
Well, no, they would have.
Just like John.
They would have filed a complaint against Dory years ago.
That's true.
All right, Milkman.
Milkman says Brandy has him by the short and curlies on this one.
I don't want to touch their short and curlies, okay? No. Greg, Newsom signed the Nick Shirley Act. Ferguson is going to sign the Brandy Cruz Act. Just watch. Full-blown communism in action. Hey, in Bob Ferguson's defense, he lets me come to his press conferences. So he's not the one trying to, unless he's pulling strings behind the scene and letting me come to his press conferences, it's a cover. But he's not my biggest issue on the press freedom front, okay?
I think he's aware he doesn't want to get involved.
Yes.
Yep.
He should get involved.
Baron of Grey Matter for $5 says, if you're taking flack, it means you're over the target. Press on.
Yeah. On the money for LGBTQIA plus, looking up for Jesus, Two-Spirit. So you're saying you're schizophrenic? Yeah, I just got two different vibes depending on the day.
You're a masculine, feminine.
Mask femme.
Yeah, I don't know. Christian says the trans and queer refugee funding seems like a blatant effort to reward and attract political allies.
Yeah, I mean, true. People are moving out of the state, like, who vote for Republicans, and they're trying to bring more people in, get it bluer and bluer and bluer. Mm-hmm. Stephanie, I'm still waiting for my white privilege to kick in. Yeah, and that's what I was thinking, too, with all this, like, accusations about all the dark money I'm being given and funded. I was like, man... Okay, if they're going to accuse me of taking it anyway, might as well just take it, you know? It's like, but first someone has to offer it, and I haven't got any offers yet, so.
That's the problem. We don't get enough donations on that side. Like, on all of our causes on the right, the left gets this crazy money.
Oh, yeah, like, left's full
I'm saying
of money.
They don't have enough money to pay you.
The fact that the left automatically assumes, oh, she must be getting money under the table, tells me that the left is giving people money under the table.
Absolutely.
Because they're like, this is how we operate. So it must be how they operate.
Isn't that the rule of accuse them of doing what
you're doing? What you're doing as you do it. I also just, again, like they say that my words are worth $1.25 million. I'm like, when is that going to happen? I was like,
Show me money.
But yeah, okay.
Yeah.
All right, on Washington joining the lawsuit to halt the USPS ballot rules, Todd Welch, the USPS rule needs to be implemented over a few years. The federal government is not ready to execute it today. No one's ready to execute it today. So sorry if it makes you mad. I know people want changes to elections and we're running out of time with President Donald Trump at the helm, but I don't want to throw things into a free fall.
I don't like their arguments, though. I mean, okay, a minute. I mean, we have technology that goes through things very, very fast. So I don't believe that in the end it will take that long. I think it's a doable thing,
right, 100%.
That maybe they just can't implement yet.
Yeah, I also think like the Secretary of State's office released a new election website before the midterms or before the primary, and it was horrible. Like they left off legislative districts and the old one worked fine. So they put all this energy and time into creating a new elections results website. It was awful. So the state Republican House caucus, they like cooked one up in 15 minutes and made it live so people had a place to go for election results. Mm-hmm. And they were using House Republicans' website as opposed to the Secretary of State. So like that's what I mean by I don't trust that they'd be able to get it done or ready in time. So
I agree.
All right, Nicole.
Oh yeah, you want to see my shirt first?
Oh, okay. Sure, yeah.
Oh, isn't that adorable?
Dolly shirt. Wow, look at the knockers on her.
I have a few, but this is one of my favorites.
Yeah,
so.
No, that's a good one. And it's going into...
I'm loving how it's bringing everybody together. Yeah. Every station, yeah. I have not seen one person say, I don't really like...
Well, I shared President Trump's comments about Dolly Parton's passing on my Facebook, and some guy was in the comments saying, it's funny because you know she didn't vote for him. And what was interesting... is everybody was policing that comment. Like people who are usually trolls and then supportive, everybody's like, hey, now that's he said something nice, just let it be. So it's like, good, everybody's policing the weirdos, well, right?
I mean, she has said that she grew up with a Republican father and a Democrat mother. They just didn't talk about it. And she wanted to be a performer and entertain everyone. So yeah,
love that.
Leave her alone in
leave
death.
Leave her even. Alone. All right, Nicole, thank you. But speaking of, let's get to our closing sanity check. At Buckingham Palace, a tribute to the late Dolly Parton. Posting with this, remembering the late, great Dolly, who brought joy, comfort, and inspiration to so many, including the millions of children given free books through her imagination library. We will always love you. Very nice tribute from the royal family. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. We appreciate every single one of you. If you'd like to support our show, it's what makes it possible. You can be our dark money support. Yeah, love that. $5 a month. Go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. See you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.